Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. July 21, 2020. My thoughts on Twitter July 21, 2020. Love, awe, and faith are the properties of the network that connects us. We are linked by a single network above the globe. Let's imagine it and begin to feel that it really exists and holds power. It is the Creator who awakens us to this connection, giving us strength and support. Before we were simply tied together, but now, when we unite, we bring all the evil between us, all the distance, all the breakage that has been revealed. And that's why this connection becomes so strong. Adam HaRishon was just an animal, an angel, before his sin. And after sinning he became equal to the Creator. The breakage that occurred at the start of creation does not disappear. Otherwise, why was it needed? It is precisely because there was a breakage that we can now build connections above it and achieve unity that is 620 times greater than it was before. Capitalism was supposed to be replaced by socialism 100 years ago, but it failed and resulted into world wars. We're ready for a change to real socialism, but there are no leaders, no masses, no plan. It is clear that the path of suffering will lead to a change of society. After all, the goal of nature's development of love of friends is mandatory. UN Secretary General, the international community must eliminate inequality on the planet before it destroys the world economy. But the creation of a world community is possible only by bringing people closer together as a result of global education. Through understanding or through suffering, the world will come to this. Medium published my new article COVID-19 will unite us, even if against our will. Alongside rumors of a near-to-come vaccine, governments and municipalities face the reality of a lingering and fast-spreading coronavirus pandemic. Some are reinstating lockdowns, others are begging residents to abide by instructions, maintain a 6-foot distance, and wear masks. Still others are fining residents, and in places where central governments are too weak to enforce, such as El Salvador, gangs enforce closure with baseball bats or, as in Colombia, with guns. Governments, citizens, affluent, afflicted, capitalists, and socialists, everyone must transcend their restricted visions and look at the whole, the integral, which is all of humanity, and all of reality. Only if we act as one will we know what to do to heal our society and heal from the virus. But a lockdown is not a work plan, it's an emergency measure that can, at best, inhibit contagion but not finish it off. As soon as restrictions are lifted, infections return with a vengeance. Worse yet, in some cases, such as that of the Argentinian trawler Akizan Mariu, the virus seems to appear literally out of nowhere. The ship's crew was all tested and came out negative, went into 2 weeks of isolation prior to sailing, and set out to sea. Somehow, after weeks at sea without contact with anyone besides the crew, all of a sudden, virtually the entire crew got COVID. The coronavirus is a mysterious bug. At first we thought it affected only the lungs, and the sick and elderly. Then we realized it affected much more than the lungs, that it causes blood clotting and affects other parts of the body. Then we realized it affects not only the elderly, but everyone, even embryos and infants, such as the mass contagion where 85 infants less than 1 year old have tested positive for coronavirus in one Texas county. As if this is not enough, the UN warns of global mental health crisis due to COVID-19 pandemic, and patients and doctors are reporting brain disorders found in mild, recovering COVID-19 patients. It is no wonder that the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says that the world is at the breaking point. Mr. Guterres not only observes the state of the world, he also points out the reason, lack of mutual responsibility. According to the Daily Mail, Guterres stated that the COVID-19 crisis is exposing fallacies and falsehoods everywhere, The lie that free markets can deliver healthcare for all. The delusion that we live in a post-racist world. The myth that we are all in the same boat, and that developed countries are strongly invested in their own survival and have failed to deliver the support needed to help the developing world through these dangerous times. Reconstruction after the breakdown. Before our very eyes, the invisible menace is crumbling our civilization. It has placed a mirror that exposed our disconnection and alienation from each other, as Gutierrez phrased it so well. It has shattered our illusions about ourselves. Our civilization of entitlement has come to its end, and out of the wreckage, a new humanity will rise. Bit by bit, we will grasp, truly, in our hearts, that humanity abides by the same laws that govern the entire universe. We have yet to realize that we are part of nature, created by it, and therefore subject to its laws. Just as homeostasis, namely equilibrium between different but interdependent elements, governs all of nature, balance between receiving and giving must govern human society. Humanity is an integral entity, an indivisible whole that seems divided only because of our self-centered perspective. When we look at the world, we seek to gain pleasure or avoid pain. By doing so, we analyze which part of what we are seeing will benefit us more or harm us less. Inadvertently, we divide the integral world into parts and miss the perception of the integral reality. Because of this fractured perception, for example, our hearts always go out to the hunted animal when we watch nature films. We don't realize that predators keep the flock healthy by eating mostly the sick and old animals, prevent overpopulation and the resulting depletion of vegetation. Keeping vegetation lush decreases soil erosion, which prevents streams from eroding their banks, and prevents mudslides and flash floods. When you look through the prism of integrality, there is no good or bad, there is homeostasis, wholeness. When you look through the prism of personal benefit, there is only good or bad, hurting or being hurt. This is the sad world that COVID-19 has come to end. It has come to admit us into an integral world where everything is one, complete, inseparable, and indivisible. Clearly, the virus is leading us there against our will. But it is stronger than us, so the more we insist on separation, the more we will suffer. No leader will be able to fight it, no protest will be able to restore the economy, and no vaccine will stop the transformation of society. We are in the same boat even though we act as if we're not. If we keep this up, we will all sink. Therefore, every person who understands the situation must carry on the message. Governments, citizens, affluent, afflicted, capitalists, and socialists, everyone must transcend their restricted visions and look at the whole, the integral, which is all of humanity, and all of reality. Only if we act as one will we know what to do to heal our society and heal from the virus. My new article on LinkedIn: Under Pressure, A Society on the Brink of Collapse. When you watch the news, you might think that the world has gone off the deep end. On the one hand, you have the coronavirus epidemic that's ravaging the country and the entire world. On the other hand, you have a teetering economy that's struggling to stay afloat. And in between, you have countrywide racial tensions and an approaching presidential election. Is it any wonder that people are so tense these days, that there is so much violence and anger? Society is on the brink of collapse. Our social relations are the problem, they contaminate our relationships, and the disregard toward the doctor's orders is simply a symptom of our disregard for one another. There is no point drawing post-COVID scenarios since people aren't blind, they see that COVID isn't going anywhere. If anything, it's only ensconcing itself deeper in the country. As things stand today, I don't envy the next president. Nothing that any government can do will ease people's anxiety, get rid of the virus, or get the economy back on track. But in fact, right now we don't need to do anything, we need to understand. We need the right perspective, and then we'll know what to do. We need to realize that the world around us has changed. We will not return to excessive consumerism, frantic tourism, and the noxious attitude we proudly called capitalism. Thank God, the virus killed them all. They were old, had countless background illnesses, and the virus did away with them. In that sense, the virus cured us. Actually, the fact that the coronavirus is so contagious is a blessing in disguise. People were so hostile to each other and felt so alone that tens of millions of young Americans were forced to find refuge in substance abuse, depression, all sorts of escapism, and extreme violence, both homicides and suicides. If we follow the doctor's orders and keep our social distance and wear our face masks, we will at least stop hurting each other. Afterwards, we can start thinking about reconnecting in a non-toxic way. It is no coincidence that staying 6 feet apart is called social distance and not physical distance, which is what it is. Our social relations are the problem, they contaminate our relationships, and the disregard toward the doctor's orders is simply a symptom of our disregard for one another. If we wanted to heal the country, we could end it by simply following their orders for a couple of weeks and the virus would be gone. But we don't care about each other, we do whatever we want, and the virus is having a field day. If we don't begin to change our attitude to one another, the coronavirus will destroy our healthcare system, ravage our entire population, disrupt supply chains, products will not reach the stores, and all the money that the government will pour into people's bank accounts won't help them feed their children, since the shelves will be empty. This is the future we are building for ourselves just because we don't care about each other. In today's reality, one cannot live in disregard for others. It is called mutual responsibility, and today it is essential for our survival. If we exercise it, we will live, and live well. If we spurn it, we will starve. Kabbalah, a method of changing one's fate. Question: what is fate and what is karma? Is there a difference between these concepts? Answer: I don't know what fate or karma is in other people's minds. I can only say that a person has his own path, and while walking through it, he can alter it. I don't know whether to call it karma or fate, but everyone has it. This path begins with the fact that everything is already embedded in a person. Just as a drop of seed contains all the information about the future person, there is a spiritual drop of seed that determines the development of an earthly, spiritual person in us, and in this way we advance. Can this be changed? It can be. The science of Kabbalah is a method of changing one's fate, karma, if you like. Comment: the fact is that many people have a fatalistic belief that you were born with a certain fate that you have to accept and go with its flow. My response: no, that is not true. We can change our fate and ourselves. The science of Kabbalah gives a person the opportunity to attract the upper forces that can change him. A question arises: is the scenario by which this can be done also written in our destiny initially? In general, yes. The only difference is whether I follow it in a good or a bad way. I can turn myself into a person that is initially embedded in me, in the form of an information record, rather quickly, easily, and pleasantly, or I can do it in some other way. Meaning, I can accelerate my development. But, in any case, I will have to achieve the final goal that has been encoded in me. From CabTV's Conversations with Dr. Michael Leitman, Dasa City, Psychologist, July 14, 2020. When will the pandemic end? Question: now many former joys are fading into the background. Some people are changing their habits. Others are in a hurry to restore their old lives, and this is impossible to stop because people have to eat, drink, stay warm, etc. How, then, should people begin to change? Answer: the change should begin with the fact that people need to understand what they need to eat, drink, be warmed by, that they should provide themselves the most necessary, but nothing beyond the necessary. And then the pandemic will end. Everyone will be properly assigned for the work necessary for society. But no more than that. The virus will not allow us to return to the past just to earn pieces of paper. This will not happen. Question: from various sources, including the World Health Organization, information is coming that people need to prepare for new waves of diseases in the fall and winter. It is not clear whether they want to scare us or if this is a real assumption. Answer: I think the same pandemic will continue. It will come and go in waves, and no vaccine will help us. After all, it is not about medicine, but about people correctly perceiving their attitude to nature, the environment, and society. It must change. If their attitude changes, this will be the vaccine. From CAB TV's Today's International Situation, June 18, 2020. The change of worlds is an era. Remark: many people fear losing the world these days. My comment: indeed, I see it. But I personally have no fear. On the contrary, I am like that bird singing a new world so that I can already stand up and open to all. I think the sooner this happens, of course, with a soft landing, the better for humanity. So far, everything is going according to plan. Humankind will gradually be freed from piling up all kinds of egoistic enterprises and ties. Involuntarily, people will become simpler in their ordinary lives, they will value relations between themselves more, either through suffering, or through awareness, but still it will come to them. The change of worlds is an era. From CAB TV's Today's International Situation, June 18, 2020. Attaining the upper force. Question: is the question of the meaning of life individual or common to all? Answer: understanding the root of life is common to all. But you know it individually. You begin to see that the real universe is eternal, infinite, and you also exist in this eternal, infinite movement. There is no death besides the one that seems to us because it falls only on our animal state. The higher state is not affected by the death of the animal body. You see that the knowledge of life is the attainment of the force that governs all of nature. We call it Creator because it created us. But this is not what is implied in religions. This force is attained in the properties that we acquire, absolutely clearly, experimentally. You begin to feel how everything exists around you, and at the same time, you rise to this level. It becomes clear to you what a human means, how he is different from the inanimate, vegetative, and animate world. After all, they all exist within the framework of a small earthly egoism, including us. And if you rise above your animal egoism, then you begin to attain the eternal, perfect state in this world, in this life. And our material existence in no way limits us. From CAB TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, May 24, 2020. Knowing the Creator. Question: listening to your lectures on the internet, I noticed the phrase to know the Creator by the creature. In essence, the very process of learning requires a large amount of time daily, attention, and incorporation from us. On one hand, as I understand it, we come to know the Creator through the creature, that is, through active actions within our lives, and on the other hand, we have to disconnect from this life. How to untie this knot? Answer: in fact, we can do whatever we want in our lives unless we harm other people, because this will definitely stop us from revealing the Creator. But if we live and work normally, have everything that a person usually has, but at the same time systematically devote time to study the attainment of the Creator, that is, devote, let's say, 2 to 3 hours a day to this, this is enough to begin to feel the sphere that manages us, which is outside of our world, and to begin contact with, open, and enter into an internal two-way dialogue with it. So, progress until you begin to feel these states as absolutely real. This by no means is an escape into some kind of space, nor meditation, but simply a systematic training to expand your sensations, and increase the sensitivity of your internal sensor. Question: should I immediately apply my new sensations, new knowledge, and the new perception of the world in my life? Answer: this does not obligate you to do anything. What will happen to you will be carried out only by your choice, at your will, gradually. You will be able to use this for attaining the true reality you exist in. You will feel the forces that manage you, how they change your desires and move you from inside. You will become absolutely clearly aware of the hand that is inside of you, like in a puppet being led by a puppeteer. It moves and controls you, and in response to this sensation, you make a decision whether to obey it or not, to go with it in unison or not. Here appears your free will. In such a way you begin to work either with the upper force that governs you or against it. In general, here the combination between you and the Creator begins. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, May 24, 2020. Should we kill a mosquito? Question: you say that animals eating each other is part of a harmonious system. What if a person intervenes in this? What if the mosquito bites me and I kill it? What will be the outcome of such interference in nature? How responsible are we for this? Should we do it or should we try not to kill a mosquito but simply shoo it away? Answer: don't worry. Nothing terrible will happen as a result. It all depends only on whether you wish others good or bad. As for the mosquito, you don't need to care about this especially. I am serious. It is because we bring about harm or correction to the world by our desires for good or for evil. This is the whole problem. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, November 17, 2019. Opposition to Unity, Part 9. Being chosen is determined by life. Question: different movements within the Jewish people have a different perception of the term God's chosen people. Some of them believe that the fulfillment of religious precepts is enough, and thereby, they bring joy to the Creator. Others claim that Jews gave the world economics, morality, science, and art, and in this we are chosen. That is, the Creator gave us brains, and by this we benefit the whole world. Still others are trying to abolish this concept of the chosen people in every possible way, claiming, we are like everyone else. There is no such thing as a chosen people. And Kabbalists argue that God's chosen people are to teach everyone the correct unity. How can a person understand what it means to be a chosen people? Answer: I think that there is no need to think too much about it. Being chosen is determined by our life from generation to generation. Although humanity is advancing, developing, becoming more reasonable, and understanding that there is nothing of the chosen people in us, we implicitly feel that we are separate from all of humanity, that we are chosen. For better or for worse, it does not matter, but we are. Nothing can be done about it. Our peculiarity is that we have to bring to the world a great ethical, cosmic, spiritual meaning, why we exist and what we must achieve. But in order to accomplish this task, we ourselves need to attain, to reveal, the meaning of the existence of all humanity and of the Jewish people within humanity, what purpose we must achieve, what role to play, how to spread this knowledge, and how to bring humanity with us. In principle, this is exactly what humanity expects of us. Let us hope that we ourselves will become aware of this and will be able to explain this to others. From Cab TV's Systematic Analysis of the Development of the People of Israel, July 29, 2019. Is it possible to change character traits? Question: the basis of man is DNA, that is, our genes that determine everything, our physiology, all kinds of inclinations, and even, as they say now, political views. Do you agree with that? Answer: what is the difference if genes or some other particles, waves, or elements determine our inclinations? Of course, there are properties set for us that guide us, and thanks to which we distinguish the characters of people, their different approaches to life, etc. Call it genes. Remark: our genes can manifest themselves as qualities that can or cannot be changed. For example, if a child is born in a family of egoists where the cult of money reigns, then, in principle, he has no chance of growing up as an altruist. My comment: no, I do not agree with that. We see in nature opposing properties. Our teacher Balha Sulam writes that inversion is very often observed. We know that in Russia revolutionaries were born in noble families. This is the eternal problem of fathers and children when the children go against their parents. Thus, it is the properties of the parents that can be inverted in children. Question: do you think that character traits can be changed? Suppose a person has a Pontchartrain genus. Answer: there is no need to change anything. I believe that this cannot be done because the data that are in us are the so-called first 9 sephirot in every person, in every partsuf, in every soul. We just need to learn how to use them correctly. From Cab TV's The Post-Coronavirus Era, April 30, 2020. New Life 1251. Demanding Work Culture.
Shalom lachem.
Hello to all of you. Thank you for joining us. We are here in our New Life series of talks with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello to you. Hello everyone. This is show number 1,000. Right. 1,100? No. 1,200. Oh, and yeah, you may be right. Yes, of course, you're right. It's show number 1,251. And today's topic is the demands of the workplace. We're used to working a lot. A person goes to work, comes back in the evening. There are studies showing that if at 8 p.m. you're still at work, your family is probably not doing well. But this is what we're used to. It can be someone who's a great tycoon running international businesses, and it can be some small, a programmer that has to work for many hours, a doctor taking insanely long shifts, a kindergarten instructor who's with her children on the phone, and so on. So we call this style of life the demanding workplace, right? And the question is, why did we create such demanding structure, taking so many hours of person's time? Why? Dr. Lightman. Because we think that by this, we will get a better life. That we will advance, that we will flourish, that it will be good. So we measure success in life by the number of hours that I work. If someone hears that I work a lot, many hours, well, probably he thinks I probably have a very, very large salary I get, or I have some very special job or special position, it's respected. By the way, I know people in many countries who work in government. I know that at 9, 10 p.m. they're still in their offices. What are they doing there? According to my investigations, they're not doing anything really. They're just showing others that they're working. That's the workplace culture, so to speak. Owen, in the past, people thought that technological advancement will relieve us from this need to work for so many hours. If I look at processes happening in the last 100 years, it's the exact opposite. We advanced technologically a lot, and on the other hand, people are working crazy hours. Excuse me, but when, you know, people are going to sleep, they're still answering work emails and messages on the phone. So how did it happen that what we thought is going to happen did not come about, and rather we got the exact opposite? Why did technological advancement not release us from this very demanding situation? Dr. Lightman, we don't want to be released. We came to a state where our work is our life. We replaced life with work, as though that's life. Suddenly I look at people in a way where what interests me is, well, what do you do? What's your work? What do you work at? Everyone's talking about work. It used to be that people talked about, let's say, I don't know, soccer more, sports. Now it's less. People talked about their vacations a bit more. Well, not so much. The work becomes more and more. And this is clear. If a person is at his workplace for 10 hours a day, what else does he have? What else can he talk about? Everything revolves around his profession. He lives around that. Owen, would you say this is a natural development or something that's distorted, warped? Dr. Lightman, of course it's warped. We weren't born to work like that. We were just destroying the earth also through that. Owen, what exactly is the warping here about? Dr. Lightman, we're destroying the earth, plundering its riches, we're destroying the, polluting the ground, the water, and the air. We're collapsing the family structure. We leave our families and children. We have no connection with them. The father comes home, sees some news, evening news or something, and goes to sleep. The mother goes home. Or think she wants to make some dinner for the family, if she can find the time, maybe in the morning she wants to make some sandwich for the children for school or something, and that's it. They have no power, no strength, they fall asleep, and in the middle of the night also there may be work calls. You understand, we built our lives up in this way. Owen, once upon a time, it used to be different. A few generations ago, the royalty, right, if we take them to be the elite of the society, they weren't working people. You had the lower castes working. You had the aristocracy of ages past who, I don't know what exactly they did, but they didn't have to work in labor. Today, it's actually the exact opposite. The elites are people who work the hardest. And it doesn't matter if he has millions or billions in the bank. A person who is high functioning like that, with potential, with a strong mind, creative, he works from morning to night. He doesn't take a minute to breathe. How did it invert, Dr. Lightman? It's not aristocracy. People working in all sorts of high positions today, that's not the aristocracy. They're the working class, let's call them. The people working in education, culture, all those things, it's not aristocracy. An aristocrat is something, is a person who has money and doesn't need to work in order to get more money, and he has time. And because he has time, and he's properly set up in his life, as he's well-to-do, then he can take an interest in, well, his personal interests. philosophy, culture, something of that sort. That was the aristocracy, very learned individuals who had no great concerns, because you can only develop something good on the condition that there's no pressure exerted on you. You owe nothing to no one, and you can follow your heart. And so they were forward-looking people, forward-thinking people. Those were the true aristocrats. In order to be a scientist, a composer, an artist, in order to be a developed person, you need time, with no pressure. And from generation to generation, these people would develop culture, education, the education and culture for humanity. Later it became a profession, and then it all came to a close. Oh, and so what is that transition where you say it became a profession and it all came to a close? What exactly changed, Dr. Lightman? What changed is that it's no longer according to the pool of the heart, but rather according to the pool of the pocket, let's say, the purse. Oh, and so not according to the heart, but according to the pocket, yes? If today I build up a startup company with an amazing educational vision or amazing, I don't know, something to do with health, and truly to do good to people. And if I want to establish this startup company to the point where it truly contributes to humanity, I need to work for a few years like mad, not to sleep at night. Can you say that I'm different from that aristocrat scientist of old? Why? What's the difference, Dr. Lightman? That one had no goal in mind, but for the fact that it took his fancy, right? It was something he was interested in. He didn't look for any outcome. He only engaged in it because he liked it. It was interesting to him. It's a completely different thing. You need to succeed and make a profit, and then it's a job. It's a profession. You're like a worker then. And he engaged in it because his heart was drawn to it. And it's completely different. That is what we need. Oh, and let's define exactly what we need. Dr. Lightman, in the next generation, we want to develop such a society where people live only in order to supply for themselves the base necessities, which truly with the technology we have today, we should have gone past this stage of human development, this vortex with the universities, with technology and everything. But now, we need to bring ourselves to a state where it's as it used to be, where people don't work in order to make a profit and succeed, and each one pushing the others, trying to make room for himself. No, rather each one works on what his heart wants. Not to make a profit, not to find success, nothing of the sort. No, that's not even a goal in my mind. I'm an aristocrat, like aristocrats used to be. I have everything I need. That's it. And if I engage in, let's say, painting, art, music, science, something, then I'm doing it because I see it as something that, well, calms my spirit. My heart is drawn to it. That's how it should be. And we're capable of establishing this order today. Oh, and you made this kind of hand motion, right? The money, where the money entered in and then it's destroyed our previous definitions. Dr. Lightman, yes, we completely spoil everything. An aristocrat doesn't think about money, doesn't think about profit. It comes to him as if from above, like the Creator will take care of it. Owen, okay, but we're not living in a dream, Dr. Lightman. We can come to a state where I have no cause to be concerned about my necessities, right? If we organize the proper society for ourselves, we can easily supply ourselves with food, clothing, everything else we need, healthcare, let's say, everything we need in such a way where there's no scarcity, we have everything. And then our day is wide open. I don't need to get these phone calls at night from my workplace. A few dozens of years ago, maybe even before, visionaries looked towards the future and they saw where we live, where we may live, and they said, look, technology is evolving, science is evolving. At some point in the future, they said to themselves, our children or grandchildren will live in a much better world. They won't have to work and toil like donkeys, like beasts from morning to evening. A person will be able to develop his spirit. If I examine that, then I look that we're light years away. Now you said the same, right? A person will work in whatever his heart is drawn to. Do you think this will come about? Dr. Lightman, yes, there's no choice about it also. I won't do it because I'm attracted to being a painter or a composer or something like that, like those aristocrats. Because even though that's the best thing, really, why not? Instead of millions of people going to offices, sitting in offices, why shouldn't they sit next to musical instruments and discuss things and write, compose compositions together or something, learn how to paint? Why not? What do we really need in our lives? Through our lives, we want to know the inner person within us and the upper force as well. We have something to do instead of manufacturing all sorts of garbage that we end up throwing into the sea. Owen, if I look forward, then we know the demanding work culture now. If a person is not working hard, he's either unsuccessful, a failure, or lazy. Either nature didn't give him any ability, or he's just lazy, a layabout. Right? That's how we think. When you look forward, what can be more advanced than the demanding work culture? Dr. Lightman, no work culture. Work culture is such that I know that I need to provide my society with a few hours doing various works to maintain the society. And that's it, a very limited number of hours, let's say 2 hours a day or one day a week. And it all ends with that. Oh, and everything is done by robots and computers. Dr. Lightman, I don't need that many robots and computers because I don't need to produce so much product. Why? Why do I need to manufacture so many things? Malls, shops are full of garbage rags that I keep throwing out, discarding. Look at how many types of radios and televisions and computers you have. What for? I need to know that I need to give each one an apartment. Yes, that's necessary. Food, clothing, that's necessary. Minimal things. A certain norm. And that's it. That's enough. If we thought in that direction in a year or two, everything would have been supplied to everyone in the world. It would have been done. And then what would we do? Only work on how to fulfill ourselves. with various spiritual fulfillments, human fulfillments. Oh, and so let's hold a little summary here. Dr. Lightman, I was born not in order to work hard, but I was taught that without working hard I cannot exist. Oh, and so the future person becomes a lazy layabout? Dr. Lightman, no, thrifty. He uses his energy sparingly and only in the right direction. Oh, and what's the right direction? Dr. Lightman, inner development, in what typifies the human being rather than a machine. Oh, and what is inner development exactly? Dr. Lightman, to know why I live, what happened before I was born, what happens after I die, what happens with the whole world, this psychology, this philosophy, my participation with all the forces of nature, the development of the inner person within me, the inner man. And also I want to develop my connections with other people. If we're not always competing, it will be easier for us to come closer together. We will take care of our children and instill in them also a different attitude towards each other from childhood. Owen, what kind of attitude would you like to see in children? Dr. Lightman, where they don't fight, because people are born bad, as it's written. Oh, and yes, also in the workplace we sort of have these fights. Dr. Lightman, exactly. So let's arrange for ourselves such a framework for life where there's no stress, no hatred, pressure. Oh, and what causes this pressure? Dr. Lightman, competition. Oh, and competition develops you. It's written that the envy among the authors increases wisdom. Dr. Lightman, I don't need that competition. No, that's something else. This is the envy of authors, as we say. It's for the sake of advancement and not for the sake of hatred. Oh, and I don't understand exactly. Dr. Lightman, if I assemble smart, intelligent people, then by arguing, they increase their wisdom, they clarify it. If I take people, each of them holding weapons instead, then through competition, they just kill each other. There's a difference. The wise people develop. It's called the seven righteous men, or rather a gathering of the wise, and those with weapons, that's a gathering of clowns, let's call it. Oh, and what's the difference, Dr. Lightman, the goal? Oh, and how would you define a goal that brings about social progress? Dr. Lightman, it's where we want to develop, and we understand it from, well, the war of minds. The war of minds begets wisdom. The envy of authors begets wisdom, it's written. Owen, a person 100 years from now, will he be a philosopher? What will he be? Dr. Lightman, not a philosopher. No, I don't call it philosophy. Although, I guess you could call it that. The person of 100 years from now, he will understand how nature governs us and how we can come into interaction with nature in order to attain the meaning of life. Owen, other creatures in nature, do they work as hard as human beings, or do only human beings work that hard? Dr. Lightman, only human beings. If we look at the way animals live, they have lots of free time. They play around. They go to sleep for a few months in the year. Many such things. No creature lives like the human being. The human being is the true beast. Oh, and there's a sentence I like a lot. It says, go to the ant you lay about, see its ways and learn. The wise one says, don't sit at home and be lazy. Go learn from the ant. Now, I come from a settlement, a village. Now, I liked looking at ants because they build their nests everywhere and they're constantly in motion. I don't know what's happening under the ground, but if you look on the surface, they're constantly in motion. They're moving together. you have the like lines of ants marching. It's like the body constantly in movement, in motion. So the sages say, go learn from the ants. Why? And how is this related to the person of 100 years from now? Dr. Lightman, I think if we really delve into it, to look at the daily schedule, let's call it, of an ant or any other animal, we will feel how we are the ants, while the ants are corrected creatures. There's a lot of research on this also, saying that it's for no reason that we're talking about ants, saying that they're stupid, they're mindless, subservient. No, for the majority of their time, and all of nature in general, the living degree and the vegetative degree, I'm not talking about the inanimate degree even. So most of the time they're at rest, not at work like we are. Also, in our work, the work we do, you have no crucial, no goal that's actually necessary to achieve. It's all about ego and envy. Owen, because I have only 2 minutes left, if we skip forward, what will replace this demanding work culture? How can you define the next culture, the future culture? Dr. Lightman, we will need to fulfill ourselves with achievements which are cultural in nature. Cultural achievements. How is it a problem for you to learn why you live, what's happening with that? Alongside that, you will have music class, art class. Dr. Owen, what, it's like a work therapy or something? Dr. Lightman, no, we don't need to use this language. Forget about your language, the terms you used in the life that was. No, live in such a way where you enjoy whatever it is that you do. Start looking to how to develop yourself, to know why you live, what's the secret of life, the meaning of life. And if you make 10 pairs of shoes today and then someone throws them in the sea because nobody buys them, then you burnt up your time and polluted the sea and burned up resources and nothing came of it. Oh, and do you think people in the future will be more satisfied in terms of self-fulfillment? Dr. Lightman, they will engage only in actions that benefit everyone and harm no one. Oh, and how will this affect a person's feeling of self-fulfillment? Dr. Lightman, that's exactly, listen to what I'm saying. If you do good to everyone, doing no harm to anyone, this will affect your state of your feeling of fulfillment. Oh, and Dr. Lightman, I would happily jump into that picture where a person does only what his heart wants to do, what he's drawn to, and develops himself that way. Will we all be like that? Dr. Lightman, yes, you will feel like the aristocrats of old, of 1,000 years ago, where you don't need anything from anyone, you don't exploit anyone, you're just living your life comfortably. Owen, I wish, so thank you very much, thank you all for being with us, New Life, learning to live well. All the best, goodbye.